Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is sponsored by Aura. Browns fans, your online data and identity are way too precious to be left just hanging out there in the open for these data-stealing thugs to come after it, take it, and sell it to whoever they want. Scammers and spammers are just capitalizing on all of your data being sold, and I'm telling you right now, you don't even realize it because I didn't realize it. Head over to Aura, Aura.com/dogs, D-A-W-G-S. Get a 14-day free trial. This is what I did. Create your account, and then you can run your data check, a free data check, and it will tell you how many data brokers are selling your information on the dark web and in different areas of the internet, and then Aura starts working immediately to remove your information from those places. I kept thinking I was good online, I was fine, I wasn't doing anything crazy with my information, I was being cautious while I was shopping online, all those things, and still, when I ran my check, I had 14 data brokers identified selling my information, and Aura immediately started taking my name and all my information, my address, my email, my phone number, everything out of those places. I am so sick and tired of getting the spam emails, getting the spam text messages, the calls, and it's time to put all that crap to an end. So check out Aura, 14-day free trial, run your checks, see what all the features they have to offer, like their VPN, their parental controls, everything that they have to protect your online identity. Aura.com/dogs. Take back control of your identity today.
Welcome to the Dogs Podcast with your hosts, Blake Reniker, Justin Charles, and Josh All.
The NFL Competition Committee has proposed a new rule that would penalize a player 15 yards and an automatic first down for using the hip drop tackle, which I already hate that we're naming a tackle. It's stupid. Okay. The definition of the hip drop tackle is a player grabs the runner with both hands or wraps the runner with both arms and unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, landing on and trapping the runner's legs at or below the knees. Well, one, I feel like there's a ton to unpack there. One, that's the refs already are struggling mightily. They're terrible on a pretty consistent basis. Now we're asking them, did they wrap them with both hands? Did they swivel their body and unweight themselves? Did they land at the knee or below it, or was it just above the knee? There's so much, like, is it going to be reviewable? Can they review this thing to see where you landed on them? Are you allowed to grab them with both arms, unweight yourself, swivel? But if you didn't land on their knee, it's okay. It's so many gray areas. It's ignorant. The last thing we need right here is we need less ticky-tacky calls in the NFL. Nothing is worse than seeing your team lose a game because late in the game you get some terrible call. Browns fans know this better than almost anybody. I mean, Bottlegate. Like, the refs are already interjecting themselves too much into NFL football games. We need less of it, not more of it. We don't need ticky-tack calls. We don't need 15 yards and an automatic first down. Imagine your team makes a huge fourth down stop late in the game. Other team has the ball like the 45, 50-yard line. You get pressure off the edge, chase down the quarterback, sack him for a huge five-yard loss, push him. They can't attempt a field goal anymore. And they call this crap hip drop tackle, moves them right up into field goal position. They run the clock out, beat you by 1 point on a last second. I can already see it. I can already see it happening all the time. It will be terrible. You can't regulate the risk out of football. I'm not saying we should go out there and let them be NFL Blitz 99 on the Nintendo 64 and just missling and torpedoing themselves at players. I think it's a good idea to not let people lead with the crown of their head. That's not how you're supposed to tackle anyways. Okay, I'm all for player safety in that regard. But you can't regulate risk out of football to the point where you're fundamentally changing the game of football. It's not going to be, 10 years from now, we're not going to have tackle football because you're trying to make it so safe. Well, newsflash, they know what they signed up for. And football players like hitting. That's why we played football. That's why I played football growing up. Anybody who else played football, I'm sure that's why you played. You got to hit people. That's what makes the sport different, and that's what makes it fun, is hitting people. It's a violent contact sport. You can't take the risk out of it. You can try your best to make it as safe as possible because we don't want people to get hurt. And I don't say it's okay for players to get hurt, but even that player knows this is the risk I'm taking. I know when I sign up to play football and to make millions of dollars to play this game that there is a chance I will get hurt. I knew that when I made $0 in high school playing football. There's, you know, before college kids made money, kids were playing and they knew there's a chance they were going to get hurt. You can't just change the rules to make it safe. You're high offense, yes, we want high scoring. That's what gets the casual fan in, all this good stuff. There is a line. There is a fine line between pushing a high offense of a high offensive output and just eliminating defense. How are guys supposed to tackle on anybody? Look at the NBA. They've regulated so much defense out of the game that their ratings are way down across the board because nobody wants to just watch an all-star game. Like, yeah, we like it if a guy can come out and get 50, but getting 50 anymore has lost its appeal because everybody puts up 50 because there's no defense being played anymore. And I get the game has changed, you know, in reference to the NBA, all five guys can score most of the time on your team as opposed to one or two guys being able to score. But if you watch the game, there's no denying that the defense, the rules, what they allow the offense to get away with in terms of steps and all that, it's so geared for guys to score now that you can't get people to watch the game on a consistent basis. I love the Caps. I'm a huge Caps fan. Okay, I used to watch every game. I was at the 2016 parade when we won the championship. I'm a diehard. I have confetti from the Cavs parade on my shelf back here. I haven't watched a game all year. It's just the NBA. It's just not a priority. I check scores. I try to keep up with it, and I want to watch a game, but there's always something else going on, and I don't prioritize to watch it like I do. I prioritize the Browns, and it's going to get to the point where you're going to regulate so much of what makes people fans of the game that you're going to go too far and you're going to start losing viewership. And I know that sounds crazy to say now because the NFL is king and it has been. And I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight, but the NBA thing didn't happen overnight either. Okay. So you're going to go so far one way that you're going to start losing what makes the game special. And it's just it's going to turn into the Pro Bowl. Well, nobody watches the Pro Bowl. Okay. So you can't take the risk out. You can't change the rules to take the risk out, and one side of the ball can't be so favored that it's almost not fair. The offense already knows snap count. They know where they're going. Okay. The defense, they have no benefit to playing defense anymore. It's a corner is already the hardest position. And now you're going to tell guys they can't tackle people. You essentially can't tackle them from behind because you can't horse collar tackle them. And now you can't grab them by the waist and pull them down. And it's just wild. You can't hit them hard in the chest because they'll call it a penalty. Even if it's a clean hit, they'll call it a penalty because they'll call them defenseless. There can't be a defensive player on a football field. If you're on the football field, you're not defenseless. You're wearing pads. You know where you are. You're supposed to have your head on a swivel. The peel back block is the softest rule I've ever seen in my life, and they call it in the NFL. The game is becoming so soft and watered down anymore, and it sucks. I hate it. Obviously, I'm going to continue to watch it. I love it as in terms of football, but just the way it's trending, it's so bad. And to me, this is an awful idea. There's so many gray areas. There's going to be already so much speculation on if it was or it wasn't. How many times are the Chiefs going to get the benefit of this call? Or if your team has a star quarterback and they got chased from behind and they got tackled, they're going to get this call every time. It is what it is. It's going to be terrible. I hate it. I very much hope it fails. The NFL owners are supposed to meet in Orlando next week. I hope this is just laughed out of the room, because if they pass this, I feel like we're spiraling towards a direction that I don't know how you can recover from, and I don't understand how the NFL can preach player safety and make rules like this, but then you're already hearing that they want to push an 18-game season. They're already making them play on short rest, playing on Thursday nights, you know, 4 days rest. You can't preach player safety, then at the same time make people play on shorter rest, make them play more games. It's just, it's all about money. And that, and like I said, everybody can see it, and we're going to keep watching it for now. There's no doubt. I'm not saying overnight things are going to happen, but if you continue to make rules like this and push this kind of thing, eventually people are going to have enough, and it's just going to, it's going to lose its spark. That's all it is. And you're going to start to lose viewership, and then you can't renege on some of this stuff, because then players, and then you're going to get sued. Well, you said this was for safety, and now you're going to let people do this to me, and I got hurt. Now you got to answer for it. I thought it was not safe. So I think this is kind of a big thing for the NFL. I really hope this fails. I think a lot of guys in the NFL know, like, especially defensive players, what are we supposed to do? Well, how can I tackle a guy if I can't grab him by his jersey, if I can't grab him by his waist, if I can't hit him hard in the chest? Like, I mean, what am I have to ask him to stop so I can run out in front of him and form tackle him? I mean, come on, these guys, it's unbelievable. The most controversial, dumbest rule change. This is what I did my solo episode on before it happened, when it was just a proposed idea. Somehow unanimously passes NFL banning the hip drop tackle, which the fact that we've named a tackle is wild to me. But before I give, I put some thoughts on this in my solo episode, but before I toss it up to you guys, I heard that they expect this to be called frequently in the preseason, but hardly ever called in the regular season. They're saying the officials have had no time to practice it, calling it. They've had no time to really dive in and see it in real time and making the call. Basically, the officials are so new to this, they're not going to really call it in the regular season. Well, one, if that's the case, then why are we doing it? Okay. And two, that tells me there'll be no consistency in calling it. If we're hardly going to call it, that means you're still going to call it sometimes. So if it happens 2 to 3 times in the first to third quarter and you don't call it, but then Patrick Mahomes is rolling out and the we get a huge stop and then we hip drop tackle him late in the fourth quarter and it'll give him an on, and then that'll be the time they'll call it. And it'll move him into field goal range and they'll beat us on a field goal. And they'll be like, well, that's the rule. But you didn't call it the other 3 times. I'm like, well, we told you we weren't going to call it every time. Well, then why are we doing it in the first place? You're just opening up a can of worms to even more controversy and more ref hate and more wondering about the integrity of the game. It is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Andrew Hawkins came out and was like, what are we doing? Yep. This is dumb. I played wide receiver and this is stupid.
It is. I've been saying this to a lot of people. I said it is one more tool for the referees in their bag of tricks to dictate certain things throughout a football game, because it's very ambiguous. I don't care what anybody says. The definition is stupid, just like the entire rule. And if anybody out there thinks that the NFL is going to just magically somehow have officials getting this call right, how have they handled pass interference, defensive holding, roughing the passer? They have fucked up all these calls every week in every game over and over again. This is just one more that is going to be an atrocity on the field. I mean, just the definition says the hip drop tackle involves a swivel technique in which a player grabs the runner with both hands or wraps the runner with both arms and unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, landing on and trapping the runner's legs at or below the knee. So all it takes is one of those things to happen. It's going to get called. You know, they're not going to, how is any ref going to be sitting there watching for all of those things in one quick play? This is terrible.
Well, he grabbed him and he swiveled, but he didn't unweight himself.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
How can you tell?
It's just like so with the roughing subjective stuff, you know, oh, well, he didn't follow through with his body weight. What? It's just so, they just leave it so open-ended that it can't be argued factually, I guess.
I know they did it too, and they were saying out of player safety, this is just another tool that offensive have. Like, there's just another advantage that offensive had. And the offenses, there's so many things that are just dictated towards them that just make it, it's almost unfair for defenses anymore. They said for player safety, how many times are we going to see players hurt now trying to adjust to a tackle in real time where they, you know what I mean? Like, this is kind of just silly. And then my thing too, I was thinking about is like, do you coach differently now? Like, do you, your, is your coverage set up differently? Are you, because you can't let a receiver get by you. What are you going to do? Just let him go? You can't tackle him from behind, right?
Right, pretty much.
So like, do you just always spy a guy deep? I mean, that's stupid to me, but I mean, like if I'm a defensive corner and somebody gets by or I'm a linebacker, I'll take the 15 yards. Just give me the 15 yards. I'm not letting you score. And like, if you just decide that I had to use two arms to tackle a guy, which isn't how you're supposed to tackle.
Or two hands.
Or two hands. Well, then I'll give me my penalty because that's stupid. And then we'll rediscuss next year. But like, I think it's just another thing. Like, if Tom Brady called up Goodell and was like, hey, you know, it'd be crazy is like, if you don't let them tackle from behind too. Right. Like,
when you tackle somebody from behind, how are you most likely going to land? All this top of that? Yeah. Isn't that normally what a tackle is? Like, you land on top of the person. Well, if they're running ahead of you, where's the motion going to take you? On top of their damn legs. This is the dumbest rule ever.
It's so bad. And like I said on the my solo episode, you can't regulate the risk out of football.
I love that. Even
players are coming out and saying this, like, we know what we signed up for. We don't want to get hurt. It sucks if we get hurt, but we know that it's a possibility that I will get hurt. Yep. Okay. You know, if I'm using a power tool, I don't want to chop the tip of my finger off, but I know there's a chance I could. Okay. And if I do, that doesn't mean I just will only ever use a screwdriver for the rest of my life. It means that I'll be careful. You know what I mean? So it's just like, I don't understand. You're sliding it so much one way. It's like I said, it's not even gonna be fun to watch eventually. We're gonna be playing
two hand tap. Yeah, play two hand tap. Yeah.
And I think somebody posted it on either in our comments or something that rugby tried to outlaw something like this a while back and it was awful. It like completely stunted the game and they had to get rid of the rule.
Yeah, I saw
so
that.
Maybe that'll happen because like Gage said in here, what if you're 180, 190 pound corner and Derrick Henry's running? How are you supposed to get him?
Yep.
How are you supposed to tackle him? And I don't understand. So now you can't hip drop tackle him. You can't grab him by the back of the jersey or like the shoulder pads because it's a horse collar and that's a safety issue. But I can grab a guy by his hair and pull him down.
Right.
You know what I mean? How if a guy has long, so you can't horse collar because they say you pulling on them when they're running full speed like that and the whiplash motion is an injury concern. Well, what is the motion if a guy has long hair and I grab him by his long hair and pull on the back of his head? Is it not the same whiplash motion? They will say you can tackle him by his hair because it's part of the uniform. Is their shoulder pads not part of the uniform? Is their jersey not part of the uniform, but their hair is? The NFL is the no fun league. There's zero consistency in these rules. They will say player safety while adding a game to a Wednesday and a Friday, adding an 18th game. They will letting people play on turf instead of real grass. It's not player safety. It's money. You don't want a guy to get hurt who you put on the cover of ESPN, the magazine. That's what you don't want. And just say it. The guy who's in all your promos, you don't want him to get hurt because he makes you the most money. Just don't lie to us. Don't treat us like we're fucking idiots. Just come out and say, we don't want Patrick Mahomes to get his leg hurt because then we would lose some money. And at least I could say, well, I hate you, but at least you're not treating me like an idiot.
That's a great point. That is a great point.
This episode is brought to you by Omaha Steaks. Browns fans, were in late March, early April, and that means tournament season is here. And you've heard me talk about the delicious steaks and chicken and burgers and all the meats from Omaha Steaks, but did you know they also have incredible appetizers that are ready in a flash? That's right, Omaha Steaks has everything from chicken wings to flatbread pizzas, pigs in a blanket, and more. They're going to be the new favorites of all of your game day party spreads. Just head over to omahasteaks.com/dogs and score big with 50% off site-wide. That's half off all your favorites like the tender juicy steaks, big beefy burgers, and the delicious appetizers like I just mentioned. Plus, use promo code DAWGS, D-A-W-G-S, when you check out and you'll get an extra $30 off your order. Omaha Steaks is making it as simple as a layup to step up your appetizer game this tournament season. Head over to omahasteaks.com, use promo code DAWGS at checkout. That's 50% off site-wide, plus that extra $30 off your order. Value has never tasted this good. Shop today, omahasteaks.com/DAWGS. Promo code DAWGS when you check out, $30 off your order. Minimum order may be required.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At the owners' meeting, Jimmy Haslam talked about potential stadium renovations or a new stadium, and he essentially said that they were down to two options. They could either use $1 billion to renovate the current stadium as is in its current location, or they can build a $2 billion new stadium at the Burke Park site that they have either purchased or they're able to purchase if they want to. I'm not sure with all the exactly the semantics of that. But where do you guys stand? I've seen a lot of talk online about what people want. I know what I want. I don't think it's necessarily black and white in terms of cause and effect of moves and certain things. I think there needs to be talking between the Browns and the city, and if they move, how they can continue to work together to keep downtown alive on game days and still have like a cool atmosphere in Cleveland as well as have the game in Cleveland. But what are your guys' thoughts? What do you think? What would you guys want them to do?
I keep hearing the same thing. I keep hearing from a lot of people that I talk to and, you know, like people that I go to games with. They love the lakefront, right? They love like the atmosphere, like just because there's a legacy behind it. They've been doing it for their whole life. That's how they know Cleveland Browns football is walking down to the lake, going to the stadium. But just about everybody I talk to also goes, it'd be pretty damn cool to have a dome. It'd be pretty awesome to, I know my wife would go to more games. I know I wouldn't have to like beg people to go to a, you know, week 16 game with me. You know, when my wife bails out because she doesn't want to sit in the cold. So don't get me wrong. I don't know like the money part of it. Like I was talking with some guys and they're like, you know, like if it's the dome, is that all privately funded or is there city help? Like, I don't know all the ins and outs of how that all works, but, if you have an opportunity to build some like an arena like that, like a $2 billion arena, there's going to be income. There's going to be opportunities as far as like concerts, events, things that you can do there, things that technically you probably can't do year round right now at Cleveland Browns Stadium. You know what I mean? Like, so for me, there's definitely an economic thing. Would it hurt downtown? You know, maybe for sure, you know, you're moving that out of there. But as far as like the entire Cleveland, Northeast Ohio economy, if you put a $2 billion like dome like that, like something special, I'm not saying a SoFi, but I'm saying something, you know, along those lines, man, that could be extremely special. And I mean, it's kind of a turning a new leaf. We've seen the team kind of, you know, look different than what we've known in it the last 20 years of our life. Maybe it's time to, you know, put that team in front of, in a place that's exciting to play in. It's, we don't have to worry about weather.
Yeah. And easy to get in and out of. Yeah. Just fun to play in, easy to get in and out of. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys, but the way I'm thinking about it, the whole, oh, you can't take it out of downtown. It brings so much to downtown. Doesn't it only do that 8 times a year?
Yeah, 8 or 9.
A lot of money that 8 times a year, though. I bet you some of those businesses, that's like a good chunk.
Okay, but you got to remember, too, if people are coming up to Brook Park, a lot of them are still going to go into Cleveland for the Cleveland to do things and for the experience. Like, it's not like it's all going to go away.
Which is what I was going to say. It's one, if anybody complaining about building a dome in terms of like the weather, those people just haven't been to a game in a dome. As somebody who's been to Lucas Oil Stadium for a game when it was cold out, it's life-changing, okay? It's 12 degrees outside, and I wore shorts and a t-shirt into the stadium and was comfortable. I walked into Lucas, it's just so cool looking, like being in the dome. And you said maybe not a SoFi. Jimmy Haslam's, first of all, he's very rich. Second, he's not thinking little. He's moving the stadium over to, it's going to be big. He's going to do it right. I've heard things. He wants like a tunnel straight from Cleveland Hopkins to the stadium. So if you like fly in, you can essentially just like get to the stadium from the airport. Like you said, Josh, just because Brook Park's 10 minutes from downtown Cleveland, I'm pretty sure we can move the stadium to Brook Park. You build a huge parking lot around it. And then now downtown Cleveland, they don't have to shut roads down. So now if you want to go to the Browns game, you can go up to Cleveland a little bit early. Instead of getting there at freaking 6 a.m., you can get up there at 10 a.m., go get something to eat, bar hop a little bit, and then they run transit back and forth between the downtown and the stadium. You catch a free shuttle to the stadium, go watch the game, and then you catch a shuttle bus back into Cleveland, and you go home later that day. And you'll actually be able to get in and out of Cleveland in a timely manner because the other 65,000 people will be over at the stadium. So to me, like, as long as they think about things like that, like, let's keep the downtown area good. Like, you could still have the Muni lot. You could run a shuttle bus directly from the Muni lot to the new stadium. It's a 10-minute drive. You could still show up to the Muni lot. You could still tailgate and then catch a shuttle bus to the stadium, watch the game, and catch a shuttle bus back. It would alleviate tons of traffic in Brook Park and in downtown Cleveland. Two, you put the parking lot around the stadium, and it's one, it's a universal place for everybody to park. It's well lit. There's security. Okay. You're after a night game, you're not walking through a dark parking garage in Cleveland by yourself as, you know, a 110-pound female, you know, a group of girls. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I wouldn't want my wife walking back to her car by herself after a night game in Cleveland. You know what I mean? Like, it's safer. And to the people who complain, 99% of stadiums are not in downtowns of their cities.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Most people, they have them in suburbs for these exact reasons. Okay. And like I said, then Cleveland can rent it. They can tear down the stadium. You could still use that for something Browns related. You could put up a huge amphitheater, screens, have free watch parties like we do here in Canton, in downtown Canton with that amphitheater over by the brewing company. But like, there's so many possibilities they could do to the shorefront over there at Lake Erie where the current stadium is. They could put the new stadium. And then if you think, well, there's nothing to do over there, you think they're not going to then renovate that area? They're not going to put up bars, hotels, all that are going to be within walking distance of the state? No. Give it 5 years, that place will be booming.
That's one of the things Jimmy said. He said, I forget the exact quote, but he included the opportunity to develop the surrounding area. It wasn't just, oh, we're going to, you know, stick a stadium in an empty area and that's it, parking lot, cool, you know, whatever. No, he said, you know, every NFL owner nowadays has the vision and dream to build their own stadium and develop the surrounding area, I'm pretty sure is how he worded it. So he's got a bigger picture in mind. And just listening to him talk, listening to Dee Haslam talk about, she went straight to the parking and the logistical nightmare that is the current Lakefront Stadium. I would bet money that they're going the Brook Park new stadium route. They are just easing their way into this for all the fans who are against it, which I feel like a lot more people are for it. I put a poll up on Twitter the other day, and last time I checked, it was like 75-25 in favor of the Dome Stadium in Brook Park. So I think that's the direction they're heading. Yeah.
All these people complaining about the Dome will stop complaining the first time they go to the game in the Dome.
Yep.
First of all, like I said, it's going to be awesome. It's going to have like the newest amenities you could imagine. Right now, Cleveland Browns Stadium, listen, I get it. It looks great on the lake. I think from the outside, it looks great. Even inside, I like the orange seats. Our food options are lacking. It's like the same three food options at every level, it's dated. It's not up to date. It's not what all the rest of the league is doing. And We like that Jimmy Haslam has all this money so we can manipulate the salary cap, right? Well, you build a new stadium that he owns, and then he's making all this money from this new stadium, from all these events. He has more cash. We can keep manipulating the salary cap. We can keep doing all these things to keep our roster intact. Like, it's all good things. And to the people who say he should have to pay for the whole thing himself, I guess you can make an argument he's a billionaire. He should build his own stadium. But I don't know if people realize that if he buys it himself, he has sole control of anything that were to ever happen to it. And I know we don't have any thoughts of him wanting to move the team away from Ohio, but if he builds it himself, he's completely allowed to do it. No strings attached. If the city pays for some of it, they get the revenue. And then if he wants to move, he has to try or sell. He has to sell it to a local person who wants to keep it in town first. That's the rule. And then if nobody, then he can look outside of that. But the city retains some control of the stadium and the team, which is how we kept the name Browns when they left, when Modell took the team. We were able to keep our history in our name because the city had some control of the stadium and that kind of stuff. So it's important. Like, yes, he has the money to pay for it himself, but it's mutually beneficial for everybody involved if everybody shares in some of the paying for it.
That's a really good point. I had not considered that side of it. So that's a great argument for it. And plus, back to the team building idea, you know, with the cash, the salary cap and all that stuff. Now players don't have to use, I don't like the weather up there, as an excuse not to come here.
Correct.
Right.
And what attracts free agents? A brand new shiny stadium.
Sure does.
Okay. Like, oh, look how sweet this place is. I mean, I want to go out to LA to watch a Rams game. I'm not a Rams fan just because I want to go check out the stadium.
Don't even care who might play.
Yeah. So, and a big thing for me, though, is if they build the dome, they got to keep grass.
Yes.
They have to keep grass. Yep. I don't want turf. Nobody should have turf anymore. And the fact that the NFL can push player safety for all the, like, this new rule, but then they still allow teams to have turf, and they say that there's no studies that show turf, BS. It's just a money thing. So they got to keep the grass. Let us know what you guys think, though. I would be huge. I think the dome is the way to go, and I want it. And it would be easier parking and not being freezing cold would get me to way more games. Don't go to game even in the summertime. There are times I don't go to the game because I don't feel like being there for 8 hours. I don't feel like having to get there at 7 a.m. and being stuck in my parking garage until for 2 hours after the game, and then not getting home until 8 o'clock at night for a 3.5 hour game at 1 o'clock.
Right.
It'll be beneficial for everybody.
But for me personally, I saw the news notification pop up and I just kind of went, huh? Is really? And I checked a couple different sources because I thought maybe there's got to be something here. Maybe this isn't true. Maybe this is, I don't know about this. Nope. Turns out, yes, the Browns have reunited with their former fourth round draft pick, Cade York. They drafted him ahead of the 2022 season. And, you know, there was so much hype about Cade York coming in. He was the top college kicker, top prospect of that position. And the Browns have long been just trying everything they can do to find a kicker to come in and be that the next Phil Dawson, essentially. And you it's hard whenever you're trying to compare players at a position to one of the all-time greats. It's kind of, and bear with me on this, that's a lot of the flack I think that Jed Wills gets at left tackle is he's following Joe Thomas. So, of course, Jed Wills is not going to live up to a first ballot Hall of Famer that played for the Browns for, you know, over a decade or whatever. Yeah, Jed Wills is going to pale in comparison to the guy who played right before him in Joe Thomas. And so whenever we're pitting these kickers up against one of the best to ever do it, and every kicker that comes in here, it's always a comparison to Phil Dawson. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm not saying we're doing anything bad by doing that. I'm just saying that's the reality. You've got your benchmark is Phil freaking Dawson. So we draft a kicker. Well, is he the next Phil Dawson? That's immediately what gets said. And for Cade York, it was a rough, rough rookie season. So I'll kind of dive into a little bit of that stuff. But I want to make sure I mention right here before we go too far into anything else, Dustin Hopkins is under contract for 2024. So everybody who's wondering, well, what's going on with Hopkins, D-Hop? What's the situation? Why haven't we re-signed him? I've seen a lot of people say, why have I not seen the report that the Browns have re-signed D-Hop, especially after we re-signed Corey Bohorquez? D-Hop's already under contract. We don't need to re-sign him. We have him. He's here for 2024. I'm sure I haven't seen anything as far as the hamstring injury. I haven't seen a whole lot about that, but again, it's a kicker. Now, was he one of the MVPs of the season? Sure. He came in and did exactly what we've been longing for somebody to come in here and do. But at the end of the day, he's a kicker. He's not going to get that much hype. He's not going to get a whole lot of screen time, air time from a lot of channels and networks. So D-Hop under contract, good to go. Should be recovering just fine from that hamstring injury and ready to rock and roll and be our number one top guy in the special teams unit for 2024. So no need to worry about Dustin Hopkins. Cade York, on the other hand, for me, and we'll look at some stats. We'll look at a little bit with Cade York. But this, to me, is the Browns saying, look, we obviously evaluated this kid in college. We obviously felt very highly about him to draft him with a high pick, fourth round pick. That's pretty high for a team to invest in a singular position that does one thing like a kicker. You don't see that very often at all. So for the Browns to do that, they, again, were obviously very high on him. They saw the potential with him. And coming out of college, I mean, if you just look at his NFL scouting profile, 84.6% on field goal attempts over the last 2 years in college, 50-plus yard field goals at a 78.9% rate for his career. That's high. Instant lift on long field goal tries. That's one thing we didn't see in Cleveland, that instant lift. It felt like a lot of his kicks came off low trajectory. So clearly something did not transition well from college to the NFL, but coming into the NFL, he was touted for that instant lift on his long field goal tries, nailed a 57-yard game winner to beat Florida in 2020. And this is the one that when I read this scouting evaluation from his prospect profile made me think, okay, now this fits with what the Browns are probably, this is what they like to do. This is probably what they really liked about him. And this is what they're hopeful for the future. It says he is, Cade York is well-schooled and known as a self-fixer. Now we'll see, because after everything that happened in his rookie year and going into his second season where he just missed kick after kick after kick in the preseason and forced the Browns. I mean, the Browns gave this kid every opportunity to fail. They said, we stand behind you. We support you. We're confident in you. We want you to be the guy. And Cade York went out and with his performance said, I don't. He basically said, cut me. I don't want to be the guy. And it's disappointing, but you got to remember he's very young. I think he came in 21, 22 years old. He's 23 right now. That's very, very young for a young man, whatever you want to refer to him as, to come in such a high pressure position. You think about kicker in the NFL, and there's a lot of weight on your shoulders. It's a different kicking game than it is in college, because in college, especially at a school like LSU, how many games are you relying on your field goal kicker to go out there and be the difference in the score? Not many. Honestly, not many in college, especially at a bigger program like that. Whereas in the NFL, I think it's 3.5 points is the average margin of victory. So every game is reliant at some point in some way upon your kicker. So there's a lot of pressure. Extra points are different. They're further back. It's just, there's a lot of differences. And I'm not trying to sit here and make excuses for Cade York. I'm just trying to understand and convey reasons why things did not go as planned. So his weaknesses, based on his original prospect profile, he didn't handle kickoff duties at LSU. That wasn't a big deal for Cleveland. This one, though, they said he pulls the ball left on many of his misses. We saw that in Cleveland. We saw that translate into the NFL. Onside kicks were easy to handle for return teams. So again, kickoff stuff, not really that big of a deal. Not so concerned about whether or not the kicker can do kickoffs, especially with the NFL trying to pretty much eliminate the kickoff return anyway. And I wouldn't be surprised if 5 years from now there is no kickoff return at all in the NFL. I mean, they're doing away with it in, you know, middle school, high school, college is essentially on the out with it. It won't be around much longer. So it's just field goal kicking. And that's where we saw the issues lie with K York. If you look at college, 2019, he kicked 93. So here's the thing. I'll just preface this. Cade York, and I'm going to take a drink of my Danger coffee because it's early. I'm doing a lot of talking. My throat's a little dry. It's like my fourth cup of this stuff. If you guys haven't done the Danger coffee and tried that yet, check it out. It's really good. But anyway, so extra points. That's where he's always been pretty consistent. It's the field goals where he's had his issues. So I'll just run through his years. Extra points as a freshman, he made 89 out of 93. And then the next year, he made 36 out of 36. And the next year, he made 39 out of 39. So if you see, there's definitely a big change between his first season and the second two, just in the amount of extra points attempted. 2019 was that magical LSU season with Joe Burrow and Jefferson and Chase and all those guys too. So interesting that 93 extra points attempted and he made 80. So only missed four of them his entire college career. He was 164 of 168. Very good. 97.6% field or extra point percentage, but his field goals, again, this is where the problems come in. 2019, he was 21 of 27. 2020, 18 of 21. 21, he was 15 of 18 for a total of 54 out of 66, 81.8% field goal percentage in college. And then moving into his, I got a couple different stat things pulled up here, but moving into his rookie season with the Browns, he had on his, let's see, where are the extra points at here? 37 attempts and he made 35. So he only missed two extra points his entire rookie season. I think Dustin Hopkins missed two as well last year, if I'm not mistaken. So extra points, again, even though it's further back, it's a different ball game than college. He was still pretty consistent with his extra point kicking. It was the field goals that got him in hot water with the Browns. Just 24 field goals made on 32 attempts, a 75% field goal percentage, not going to cut it at the NFL level where so many games are close score, one score games. That's not going to get it done. And if you're curious what happened to Cade York last year after he got cut by the Browns, he signed to the practice squad of the Tennessee Titans in August, and then he was signed to the practice squad by the New York Giants. He was signed off of the Titans practice squad by the New York Giants onto their practice squad on November 3rd. Then he was waived on November 22nd, re-signed to the practice squad 2 days later, so just kind of getting cut, signed. Then he had a quad injury in practice. The Giants put him on IR, and he was not given a reserve future contract after the season, so therefore he became a free agent, and that's when the Browns decided to go ahead and swing back on their guy, Cade York, and bring him back, and I don't hate it. I don't hate the move. I think it's just another one of those what do you have to lose kind of things by the Browns. You bring him in. Best case scenario, he goes through training camp. Looks like he's making improvements in his kicking game, and you sign him to your practice squad and keep him there, hopefully, while Dustin Hopkins continues kicking for your team. Because remember, Dustin Hopkins, I think he's like 33, maybe about to be 34. I'm not sure, but right in that range. I know he's 33. And this is the last year of his deal with the Browns. We don't know. You know, if you can get a guy like Cade York Brad Moneymaker, on a good cost-effective, he wanted me to start saying that term, so a good cost-effective contract for the Browns, and he develops and can be your eventual place kicker the way that you drafted him to be, awesome. And you know what? If it doesn't work out, you just cut him again. No harm, no foul. I don't think there's anything wrong with the Browns bringing him back. I was just a little surprised by it. I did not expect to see him come back. But one thing we have noted over the years with Cleveland Browns kickers, they get young kickers. They come into Cleveland and they suck. Yeah, for lack of a better term, they just suck. So we get rid of them. I mean, that's the process. And then they end up working at it, going to another team or a couple other teams. And by the time they're on their second or third team, 4 or 5 years down the road, they're a consistent field goal kicker for an NFL franchise. So while I'm not saying the Browns just need to ride it out with Cade York and let him miss game-winning field goals and important kicks over and over again until he figures it out. No, that's not what I'm saying. Yes, the right move last year was getting rid of him. Cut him. He's not cutting it for this team, so cut him and find a guy who can come in here and do what you need a kicker to do. But now we get the opportunity to bring him back and see what he has learned to help him continue to grow and develop without the pressure of being the starting kicker for the Cleveland Browns. So I think it's a good win-win situation. Andrew Berry, nothing to lose here. And that cost-effective contract to keep him maybe on the practice squad, whatever, I think it's all good. So I know a lot of people out there were saying, hey, what do you guys think about Cade York? So I just wanted to drop my thoughts. We'll get Blake and Justin to chime in. Probably won't be a super long conversation just because it is essentially a move to bring in a potential practice squad kicker. Whoop-de-doo. But the fact that it is the former fourth round pick by the Browns not last year, but the year before, does make it worth talking about, discussing, and looking into a little bit more. This episode is brought to you by Danger Coffee. Browns fans, we talk about how Danger Coffee is made free from mold toxins that are in 45% of the world's coffee, but that's not all that Danger Coffee has to offer. Mineral and nutrient deficiencies are a big deal. They make you feel sick, tired, stressed, and they can give you brain fog. These deficiencies negatively affect your immune system, your digestion, sleep, metabolism. Have you ever wondered why you get an initial burst from your coffee, but then you get that little crash not long after? Danger Coffee's patent-pending process remineralizes your body with more than 50 trace minerals and electrolytes, leaving you more energized, engaged, powerful. These micronutrients enter the cells to boost performance. They bind to toxins to provide detoxification support. I know that sounds like a lot, but the bottom line, guys, is minerals matter. And most of us really don't get enough of them on a daily basis. Danger Coffee delivers micronutrients, plus it gives you access to the minerals you already have. Head to dangercoffee.com, use our code DAWGS, D-A-W-G-S, for 10% off your order. And that code can be used over and over. So you get 10% off every order you make using code DAWGS. It's time to start every day off with a cup of coffee that gets you going and actually keeps you going. Dangercoffee.com, code DAWGS.
They had the owners meeting. A lot of stuff came out of that. We had, we got news Deshaun Watson's about to start his throwing regimen. Ken Dorsey and Kevin went out to LA to talk to him. So what were your guys' thoughts with that? I've seen some things like people are like, why did the coaches have to go see him? Why didn't he fly to us? But first of all, like, the coaches are perfectly capable of going out there. You don't make the person who just had surgery jump on planes and fly across the country. That's where all of his doctors are. That's where all of his rehab is. Like, no, it's okay. They're big boys. That's part of their job. They can go out there and visit him.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of that. Yeah, I was going to say, I've heard a lot of that, you know, Nick Chubb's rehabbing every day in Cleveland, and why isn't Deshaun in Cleveland? I don't think people fully understand the life in the offseason, or maybe just the life in general of an NFL player. You don't live in the Cleveland Browns facility year round. When the season's over and it's the offseason, guys go home. I mean, you're kind of, it's fend for yourself. If you want to work out, you work out. If you don't, you don't. Like, you are on your own schedule as soon as the season is over. So it's no different for a guy like Deshaun Watson recovering from injury in the city where he had his surgery, where his rehab team is, where his surgeon is, his doctor, everything. So that all that stuff online I keep seeing is, I don't know, that's wild. I feel like people need to, I don't know, get out, open your minds a little
bit. People don't understand that this is a job. Yes. Do you live at your job? If you know what I mean? Like, if you have a bad day at work, do you just stay at work longer to make up for your bad day yesterday? No, you clock out and you go home. Like, it's a job for these people. So yes, he doesn't live in Cleveland year round. He went and he had surgery and he's out there with his doctors. Like, I one thing doing this podcast and talking to some players and going, one thing that is to open my eyes a ton is like, it's so much different when you're in the league than the fans' perspective. Like, you just, these people don't live it. And hey, somehow my child just broke in here. She can open doors. So, hey, we're going live. You want to say hi to everybody? Somebody just turned two yesterday. So
happy birthday yeah. Sophie. Yep.
Hey, all right. Well, somebody else talk so I can say hello to my
Go ahead, Justin. What do you think about that? Really Deshaun throwing stuff.
Yeah. No, I think it, well, hey, what's up, girl? Get on there. Say some things. Tell us how you feel. Yeah.
She's got the shorter motion. See, she's good to go. Get her out there.
Well, this is live TV, guys. This is live. This is what happens. You're going to go with mom, okay?
This is what happens whenever... The reason we're not in the studio tonight is because I had to get my kid tonight and threw a wrench into the whole schedule. So that's why we're at our houses and, well, kids.
Yeah, no one's broken into my room yet, so things are looking positive, I guess. so that's good. I think just touching on what you guys were talking about, too, like with the coaches going out there, I think it just solidifies everything that you hear as far as like conversation and stuff. Like the conversation and the, you know, back and forth with what the coach is saying as far as in communication with each other, like on the daily and making sure that everything, they're all on the same page. I think it just kind of solidifies that. You know, you have a new offensive coordinator, you know, they all have, are implementing their ideas into what they want to do. You have your QB1 who's going to be a big part in that. So I think it just solidifies all that.
I think it's another thing. It's in line with the whole Greenbrier thing where they go, they take the team away from the facility and they go do their thing and they get together. You know, Kevin Stefanski, Ken Dorsey, they could have just waited until the team got back together later this spring. You know what I mean? To bring Deshaun Watson, get him acclimated with Ken Dorsey. But they went ahead. They took a trip out to L.A. to meet with him, sit down, just hang out. They had dinner. I can't remember if they attended the throwing session or if it was just the Browns training staff that did that. But either way, Stefanski said that, you know, Dorsey and Watson hit it off. You know, Dorsey's a former quarterback. So he said when you get two quarterbacks together, they usually hit it off pretty well. And that's it's all good things. I don't know what I feel like people are scratching and digging and clawing to find things to be mad about with the Browns.
It's off season. It's off season. Everybody wants the drama. Everybody wants.
We've had years and years of it, and
yeah,
now it's like, well, things are actually really good. Better find something to be pissed off about.
Yeah, as a fan base, we just can't just chill the hell out for 2 seconds and just be happy. It's not like we just made the playoffs and like, regardless of how it happened and ended, we can't just chill out and just progress into the next season on a positive note. We have to just be super negative and just hate every move that, you know, the GM or the head coach or whatever has done. It's just, it's kind of frustrating sometimes. Sometimes I wish I just could go like LeBron James, Zero Dark 30 for the rest of my life with Browns fans, but I just choose not to. So, but it is frustrating. It's the off season. People need something to talk about. Free agency is over pretty much. So here we go.
I think my next solo episode is going to be a, like, why can't we just be happy?
Never.
I think that's going to be my episode because, and I don't want to do too much here because like it took me this long to think of another idea for a solo episode. But if you just go look at the success that Andrew Berry, Kevin Stefanski and the Browns have had in the last 5 years, they're right up there with some of the best teams in the league in terms of what they've done. I saw a stat today, only the Chiefs, Cowboys and one other team, I think the Bills, have more 11 win seasons than the Browns in the last 4 years.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're, you know, so it's like, I don't know. People, first of all, people are like, we haven't won any playoff games. Well, that wasn't these guys. Were they supposed to come in and turn a dumpster fire into a perennial playoff contender in their, they were supposed to go to the Super Bowl the first year they took over, or else it was a bust? People are just, and we're going to get into like Kate York coming back in like the, it's just, it's wild to me. Like, I don't
panic. Understand.
And you said off season, but it's even in season stuff that's just crazy. But
yeah,
I just want to take a second. This has been a very rough start to the episode for yours truly. So hopefully, no more technical difficulties. Although you guys got to see my child, and she's pretty cool. So you guys,
she is very cool. Yeah, very cool kid.
I can't believe she's never opened like a door before from scratch. It must be like two years old.
Well, now you got the moment doors. On video too. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's documented forever for everybody on YouTube, all you weirdos to look at. where are we? Have we gotten into Njoku being out there yet?
No.
We have not.
No.
So I thought it was really cool that David went out there. And I don't think he's going to be the last player to go out, but he went out there specifically to help with his rehab, correct? I'm not making this up.
That I can't.
Or did he go out just for the podcast? I had heard he had gone out there because he's going to throw with them. Like he's going to be, but I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe that was just some
Maybe
Twitter
he
talk.
Was part of that throwing session too. I'm not sure. I know that he went out there definitely to hang out with them and, you know, just basically just be a teammate. And that's what he went out there to do. And we've been talking about David forever now about how he has just embodied Cleveland. He is a Brown. He is the ideal, you know, the stand-up model of what a Cleveland Browns teammate needs to be. And here he goes out to L.A. to, you know, see how his quarterback's doing and lift his spirits. Because you got to remember, too, there's a lot of mental health stuff that goes on when you're recovering from injury at a pro, at any level, but especially at the pro level, because first of all, you get all the negativity. You've got your own mental, you know, you're trying to recover. Your body's injured. You're not able to do what you were doing before. You're trying to recover from that. There's just a lot of stuff going on. And I thought it was cool that David went out there to be with him.
Yep. And he should have his own podcast.
Yeah.
It was very entertaining.
Yeah. So I know we have a clip talking with Deshaun on this podcast we wanted to play.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the clip.
But no one knows how hurt he really is. Like, we don't know. I knew how hurt he was, right?
And the team did.
The guys on the team, but you hear all these other people like, oh, he's soft. He's not really doing this, that, and the third. How do you as a teammate be like making sure people know, like, no, we know. Man, we know our guys really, you know what I'm saying?
Man, on some real shit, man. 98% of things that happen to us, to Sean and myself or whoever, nobody knows. And that's what hurts the most because, you know, you have a guy like Deshaun who is literally, I mean, listen, I'm not, I keep it real, right?
Keep it a bean.
I've had a high anxiety before. Mm-hmm. That bitch hurts like a motherfucker.
Hey, yeah.
That shit hurts so bad. I couldn't walk. I thought I was a big old macho man. I couldn't do nothing. He tore shoulder, right? Tore
my shoulder.
And sure. Had a high anxiety the same game and still beat the juggernaut Ravens, you know what I mean? That's something that people don't really like comprehend the right way. You know what I mean? And seeing all that stuff on social media and stuff, it's sad because it's, the saying ignorance is bliss. In this case, it's not really bliss because you don't know, and it's you don't know all the efforts and stuff, being done behind closed doors that we do, that he does. You know what I mean? So it's tough because I know he's strong minded, but that, like, you just don't like seeing that, especially when you're giving it your all for, you know, a city.
Good stuff.
Yeah, love it.
It's all good points. We don't know what these guys are going through. Like, and this is why I always get so mad when I hear fans online talk about how he's a bad teammate and they were so much happier with Joe and all this stuff. And it's like, no, but everybody in Cleveland, from front office to coaching staff to players, they've had nothing but great things to say about Deshaun, the teammate. So to say that they don't want to play with him, that's BS. You're not in the locker room. You have no grounds to make that statement. You're just going off assumption, off personal bias. You have no idea what you're actually talking about. It drives me nuts. Everybody in this locker room wants to play with Deshaun. Some of the guys in this locker room are only on the team because we have Deshaun. Okay, and I'm not going to sit up here and tell you that to date, the trade has been what we wanted it to be. But we knew a suspension was most likely going to happen, so you had to factor that in. And an injury, it sucks, but it happens. If he's hurt every single year of this contract, yeah, you can call it a bust, but it's not because of play. Like, he can't help it, he got hurt. And I've said it before, the best ability is dependability. And so far, he hasn't been dependable. And you can use that as a knock on him if you want. And I've used it on a knock on people. And I've used it to knock on this trade so far. But getting injured is beyond people's control. I never played professional sports. I'm injured like half the year. And you have no idea what these guys are going through, how much pain they're actually playing. And you hear players who have retired talk about how, like, it's hard for them to even walk anymore. You know what I mean? So I like how Njoku kind of put that out there, because Deshaun was never going to put it out there. He was never going to come out and say, you guys sound stupid. Do you have any idea how hurt I actually was?
Right.
Because then people would be like, oh, this guy's just looking for the sympathy card. So I like that Njoku went out there and did it for him. Like, that's what a good teammate does.
That is what a good teammate does, a good leader. And you know, in comparison, talking about guys getting injured, I don't see anybody out there saying Nick Chubb's soft or that he's injury prone or, you know, he's the third highest paid running back in the league. Oh, well, that's a waste of money right there. He's just stealing money from the Browns sitting on the I think people just have their own personal insecurities for whatever reason, and they just like to project that onto other people.
I agree. I honestly, for the first time in my life, I love that there's no noise from the team and the organization. I love that it's just locked tight. I don't care about what everybody else in the media and like fans are saying. I could care less. If you want to, you know, get a narrative or make up what you want, that's fine. You know, people are bored. It's the off season. It's fine. But I love that you don't hear nothing bad coming from the team, because in the past you did. You had head coaches just talking at press conferences about players, you know, that's a locker room thing. But yeah.
No, I think I see things online all the time too, like how Stefanski hasn't come out and said who's going to call plays yet. He said, you know, they're going to make that decision later down the road. And this guy on Twitter is like, he's making this a bigger deal than it needs to be. But somebody said, no, he's not. The media is.
Yeah,
like,
you guys are.
And he's like, no, he's like, every other team we know who's calling. Well, who cares? It doesn't affect your life. You know what I mean? I don't care what all the 31 teams do. You know what I mean? It's whatever we want to do. And if it's not a bother to them in the building, I don't give a shit what you think as a media member, if you want to know or not. Like, turns out you don't fucking matter. So, and in the past, it would have been leaked. We would have heard,
for sure.
Oh, they're not coming out and saying it, but Stefanski doesn't want Ken Dorsey to call plays. He's going to keep, like, there would have been leaks everywhere, and we would know everything. I love the fact that the media is in a tizzy because they don't know the inner workings of the team. It means that finally, where it's a cohesive unit, one mind, they're all together, and they trust each other. There's no backstabbing. There's no talking. There's no leaks, because they're all there for each other for the first time in maybe my life.
Yep.
There's always been leaks out of Cleveland. People have always, for the first time ever, guys like Grossi and all these guys, they're trying to drum up narratives and start drama, and the team just doesn't care.
Yeah.
Just whatever. You say whatever you want. I literally don't care what you say. We know what's going on inside this building. Either you're with us or piss off. And I love it.
Me too, man. I think it's great. If you're a Browns fan, you're not just enjoying what we have in Cleveland right now. After decades of having the total opposite, come on, guys, you got to enjoy this. These are good times.
Yes, we have one of the best young GMs, and you can argue if you don't think he's a good GM, but your argument's invalid. Okay, he's seen across the league. He's one of the best young GMs in the league. Not just young, just best GMs, period. And then you have a coach who's been coach of the year two of the last 4 years. And that doesn't happen by accident either. And that's voted on by not just Browns fans. It's voted on by people around the league that recognize what he's doing. So for the first time in our lives, we've craved stability. And now that we have it, it's not stable enough, or it's not exciting enough. It's like we're never happy. We can't be satisfied. Good isn't good enough. You know what I mean? They gave us an inch. Now we want a mile. It's super annoying. We'll get into, I would say, probably like the least controversial one first, is the new kickoff rule that the NFL has implemented. It is now copying what they had in the XFL last year. I actually think, I know there's like some purists out there who don't like it and whatever. I like it. There's some things I've heard coming from there's some things in the XFL I don't think we need. We don't need 3-point tries. We don't need you have to go for a two or a one or a two, or some of the stuff's too extra for me. This, though, this is bringing the importance of the kickoff back to the game. Nobody liked just watching a touchback every single time. You were essentially, I mean, if we had rules like we have had the last 4 or 5 years, guys like Devin Hester wouldn't be going, you know, potentially going to the Hall of Fame.
And Josh Cribbs.
He never would have had the opportunity. Josh Cribbs wouldn't be an all-time Cleveland Brown legend. He would have never had the opportunity. They just would have kicked in the end zone every time, and it would have been touchbacks all the time. So I think this is bringing the importance. I also think it makes you completely rethink roster strategy. It adds a whole new element to the game, because now there's that sixth receiver where you would never keep him in years past, but he's a great kick returner and he could be a weapon in the return game. And now it's like, well, now do I keep that guy now? Because now he's going to get a chance to potentially touch the ball 4, 5, 6 times in a game. You know what I mean? Which could be game changing. So do I keep that guy now? And do I have to make a hard decision somewhere else? So I think it's deeper than just the kickoff rule. It adds a whole new element to roster forming strategy that people haven't thought of. And now if you're one of these people who have a guy like Nyheim Hines, I don't know if he knew this was being proposed, but if you have a guy who's one of those rare dudes who can go from standing still to full speed in like 3 steps, 2 steps, you know what I mean? Like everybody in the NFL is fast. Not everybody has 99 acceleration where they go from stopped to they're in their full speed within 2 to 3 yards. If you have one of those guys now that you put back there and everybody else has to stand still and all of a sudden he catches the ball and he's at full speed in 2 steps, 3 steps, that's a weapon now. You know what I mean? Like that's potentially game changing. And I think it makes the kickoff way more exciting. There's a couple negative things that, you know, I don't necessarily love, but I think the pros way outweigh the cons.
I like that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Justin.
No, I know like the first time like I saw it, I was like, this is weird. You know what I mean? Like the first time saw an XFL game, you see it, you're like, this is kind of strange. But just like to touch on like Blake's point, you've got a guy that in open space can just bust a cut, like make a cut and get upfield super quick. And you have a special teams unit that can kind of hold blocks. There's the ability for explosive plays is crazy. I mean, like the kickoff has become kind of pretty much irrelevant. Yep. It's not even a part of the game anymore. So for me, like this is exciting. You know, like I used to love watching Josh Cribbs. I thought it was like some of the most exciting moments of all those seasons because that was the only exciting moment of some of those seasons.
Yep.
But You have a playmaker. You got a touchdown on it, Blake. You have a playmaker who's explosive in space. You get a couple blocks and you make a cut, you're gone. You know, you're gone. You're upfield at 7 points. So I do like it. It'll be weird the first couple times you see it because it does look weird, but I like it.
It'll be, so like you said, it takes the play that was essentially being phased out of the game entirely. I thought we were going down the path of in 5 years, there will be no more kickoffs because they're essentially anyway. So now all of a sudden it turns back into a play that not only is it relevant, I want to watch it because there is strategy involved. There are blocking schemes that the return team can do. They can put either one returner or they can put two back to get an extra blocker, you know, running ahead, or they could do reverses or fake reverses, handoffs. They can, you know, the kicking team has to decide if they want all 10 of their guys on the line. Do they drop a few back in like coverage just in case they break through the line? You know, so there's all these different elements to the kickoff now that are going to be fun to watch, and teams have got to strategize and prepare. And it's going to be a lot more fun. I'm really excited about this one.
I think a bad point some people have been making is they said we're going to this pretty soon. There's not even going to be a kickoff.
No, that was the other way.
That's where we were going.
This is the point of this.
Yes.
The point of this is to keep the kickoff in the game because I don't think people want to get rid of it because one, it can be an exciting play. Two, a lot of rosters, that's what these special teams guys, you get rid of an entire special teams unit. You're putting a lot of people out of work. You know what I mean? And so, like, I don't think they wanted to get rid of the play. They wanted to find a way to do a play and do it safely. And, again, we're going to get into some player safety stuff with the next rule. Just because I think that the game needs to remain physical doesn't mean I think we should be stupid. So a regular kickoff, I can understand not wanting to do that in the NFL. I was a freshman in football on the kickoff team. And I hit a dude running at 40 yards, a full sprint. And I'm just a little 150-pound chunky kid running down there, running a 40 in a week. And I hit this kid going as fast as I could, and it knocked my helmet and his helmet off. And it hurt so freaking bad, okay? And I was running 6 miles per hour. And these guys are running 17 miles per hour. So I understand like the collision aspect and wanting to make, so the fact that they didn't just eliminate it and they're willing to look to the XFL and be open-minded, which I feel like the NFL hasn't always been open-minded, to go do something like this and try it. I like it. I think it's a good idea. the negative. I don't like that there's no surprise onside kicks anymore, but I like that. I feel like I'm more upset about that than I should be, because I'm pretty sure in my whole life I remember two.
They don't happen in the NFL very often.
No, and I know one of them was a big one. It was in the Super Bowl, and it kind of changed the tide of the game, so I understand that. But that one, and I remember one in a regular season game within the last couple of years, and in my whole life, that's it. So getting rid of a surprise onside in order to keep this play in the game, to me, it's worth it. I think there's strategy going to be involved, because the ball has to make it to the 20. Or it goes out to the 40. I think it has to land in the within the 20, in the air, or it goes to the 40. So are we eliminating squib kicks? You know,
you're risking it if you squib it.
Because you get to the end of the half and the end of the game, you're up one, there's 3 seconds left. Normally you just want to squib it, keep it on the ground. That way they got to toss it around and do, you know, some crazy tossing it back lateral play. Now you risk, if you squib it, it doesn't make it to the 20. It moves all the way out to the 40 untimed, and they can throw a bomb to the end zone. So
yep.
I'm curious to know about squib rules and that kind of thing, how that's going to change.
But, I mean, it says if it doesn't make it there, if it doesn't make it to the landing zone is what it's called now, that area between the 20 and the goal line. And what's cool is there's no fair catches. So again, there's just more strategy. So the kicking team can say, make sure you get this thing to land outside of the end zone. We don't want a touchback here. We want to be able to make a play. And the returner has got to catch it, unless he lets it bounce into the end zone, which if it bounces in the landing zone and then goes in the end zone, I think it only comes out to the 20. But if you kick it all the way for a touchback, then it's the 30.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of different rules. We're going to have to learn them as the season goes on and get, you know, there's going to be some hiccups here and there, but I just overall, I really like this concept. I think it's going to be a play that I'm not, no, nah, it's just a kickoff. I'll go grab a beer, you know?
It's 100% at least worth trying, because you know what I mean? We were literally just kicking it out of bounds every play. So I like the idea.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Dogs Podcast. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube and follow us on Twitter at the Dogs Podcast. Get your thoughts on the show at thedogspodcast.com.